Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
Okay, here we go. Welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast. And, you know, Doug, we're working on a lot of different projects. I tell you, I didn't realize journalisming, is that how you do it, journalisming?
Journalism.
Journalism. I didn't realize, you know, how much work was involved. Of course, we kind of like a two-man show here, so, you know, a lot of work into it. But we got some good things coming up. I tell you, you know, you start doing, I guess we kind of like investigative
Well, we said we were going to do some serious stuff, but within 2 weeks, it's already degenerated into complete slapstick.
Yeah, straight up hee-haw.
But we said we're going to do some serious stuff, so we are, aren't we?
We are. Yeah, we are. We've gotten into some stuff. I tell you, we've gotten into some things. We've uncovered. I feel like I'm in that old Scooby-Doo cartoon. You know, you start kind of peeling it back and digging in there, you know. And we had the benefit, too, Doug. I was talking to one of my cohorts yesterday. We got the benefit. We kind of coming back into our hometown, kind of where we grew up, with a little perspective.
Yes.
Now.
Now we realize where the money came from.
Yeah, right. And we weren't there. We weren't where the money was. But we're starting to find out, oh, that's how they had this, or that's how this happened. And so, we're learning a lot of things, and we're going to bring some of this to the light of day. And I think, you know, I think we have the benefit of time as well. So maybe some of these things would bring up won't get us killed. And we won't end up at the bottom of the river, hopefully. But yeah, I think we got the advantage of some perspective now, some time. And boy, there's, you know, I guess it's natural that there's a lot of things happening when you're young that you're just naive to.
Right.
You just didn't realize what's going on.
Right.
And so we're going to start to get into some of that. We're going to certainly do it in good taste. We're not out here trying to incriminate anyone because, you know what they say about pointing the finger? There's four pointing back at you. So,
people live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
That's it. That's right. But we're going to look into some things and look into some little local history, little items. So we got several of those things.
And we have a very interesting cold case that we're going to bring to everybody's attention.
We got a very, very interesting cold case there, and investigative journalists as we are, we've already developed some solid leads.
Yes,
so we're gonna get into that. But hey, you know, Doug, I was going to share. You know, we try to keep all of our viewers up to date on everything that's happening, and you know, I love a good Florida man story. So I got one I want to share with you today.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody out there. And this is recent. I think this happened just last week. Mm-hmm. You know, Florida man, this is actually Florida doctor. Okay, so Florida doctor.
Those are the best kind.
Yeah. So they kind of, you know.
Kind of like me.
Yeah, Florida doctor, just like you. And so this kind of, you know, two things can be true at once. You can be both Florida man and Florida doctor at the same time. And so that's what we got today with this little thing I'm going to share with y'all. But this is over in St. Augustine.
Okay,
So for our listeners, that's straight across the other side of the state. We're kind of over here on the Gulf Coast. Well, that's straight across over there on the Atlantic Coast. A lot of things. Yeah. You know, if you're not from Florida.
There's been some activity there since about 1500, I
would say. Right. There's been some shenanigans going on there.
Somebody killing somebody.
Yeah, for a while. But the Florida doctor over there, he had a little deal going. He just kind of your general practitioner. I got your family doctor, MD over there in St. Augustine.
Pay for an office visit.
Come on in.
We all need a gig like that.
Yeah, right. And speaking of that, there's that buy me a coffee link on the bottom of our page and on our podcast.
Donate $3, $4, $5.
If you enjoy the work that Doug and I are putting together, we can't do this for free.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just a lot of equipment. involved, you know.
And better than the hog slop you're going to get on the mainstream media.
Right. So, but anyway, going back to our good Florida doctor over there in St. Augustine, his deal was, he was running kind of a little deal there where certain patients, you come on in there to see him, and he wouldn't so much ask about your symptoms, right? And he wouldn't run a lot of tests. He just needed to know, what did you need? Like, he you know, doctors don't have a lot of time. When you get in there with a doctor.
They're very busy men.
Busy. You know, the system.
They're like us.
Yeah, the system kind of forces them, right? They got to kind of work them patients through quickly. And so, you know, he became very adept at working them patients through quickly. And so his basic first question was kind of like, what do you need, right? Like, and most of them needed oxycodone. turns out that's mostly what they was in need of. And now he had another twist that he put in above and beyond your average doctor, your average pill pusher. You know, most doctors, that's really what they are today. They just writing prescriptions. Right. But he had another little twist where with his female patients, he afforded them...
His good-looking female patients.
I'm
betting. I haven't read the story. You're reading it.
Right, I'm giving it to you. But yeah, you're reading into it, as any good investigative journalist would. But yeah, certain female patients... Selected
patients, yes.
Through what I would call a quid pro quo arrangement, were kind of fast tracked through the system. Like you and me, something happened to us, Doug, it may take months.
Have to get another test.
Yeah, it would take months for us to get an MRI or whatever. But certain of his female patients, they got front loaded. And so being entrepreneurial themselves, they started working to get more than they needed personally, and so they were helping others. So it was a system of him helping certain females and then them females helping others.
And they were all looking for a generous doctor.
Yes. And they were all working together in this system. Now, this had been going on for some time.
Uh-huh.
And finally, the DEA.
Uh-oh.
The feds. That's where things always go sideways, right? Man had a good... Man, if you start making a living and the federal government hears about it, it's over, right? It's over. So the DEA gets a tip. Guess who gave them the tip? The sheriff's office over there, whatever county, saying, what is that?
Volusia, maybe?
Anyway, or Flagler. Maybe it's Flagler. So Flagler County Sheriff's Office gives them a tip. And so that's how the DEA got in on this. So evidently, you know, the sheriff's office caught on. But here's where the story really got interesting to me. I've spent a big part of my life working in the federal government.
I kind of know how the
federal government operates. Well, they didn't send one. They didn't send two.
Right.
They sent several female agents undercover and made multiple trips into the good doctor. Now, again, I'm not a prosecuting attorney, you know, a district attorney or state prosecutor. I don't know how much evidence you need.
Yeah.
But it seemed to me like one trip in there was some...
Now, what did these ladies do when they got in there? Was there some kind of activity that...
I think the best way to say it for our, you know, family-friendly show... They provided certain favors to the good doctor in exchange for the quick exchange of the oxycontin. So that's kind of how this went down. But again, I'm reading into this and I'm like, okay, the undercover officers secured 17 prescriptions with three undercover female officers. Did we have to get that much to take this thing to prosecute this guy?
They kind of got carried away with it.
They must have, you know, the doctor over there, he may be very charismatic
Well, they were calling their field office. I think we might need more evidence,
let's hit him one more time.
Let's work this a little more.
So, you know, at least, I mean, if they got 17 scripts, to me, that's at least, you know, 15, 14 visits to get all that done. Three agents and federal agents, female agents undercover, And where did all the drugs go?
They might send them. They might send them on us, Steve. We better be careful.
That's what they call right there the honeypot. So they're probably brewing a honeypot just for this podcast to get us shut down, because we're gonna be looking into some of this stuff. And
well, how did it go down for the doctor? Did they come in and raid him?
Oh yeah, he got raided. He's over. He's in the federal pen already. You know, that awaiting trial. You know what I mean? So anyway. And I'll read a little bit of this, because here's the interesting thing. Dr. Hollington, during the visits of the undercover officers, he would ask them about their drug preferences and offered prescriptions for those drug preferences without medical justification.
Oh, okay.
So again, one victim described him as a monster who took advantage of her vulnerability while seeking help for addiction. So he's the monster, you know. It's never the drug user,
right.
He's the monster, you know, that took advantage of her. A fourth victim, it says here, recounted Dr. Hollington asking if she needed a sugar daddy. Now, and here's the other thing about this, Dr. Hollington, the accused, you know.
It's alleged.
Yeah, we got to say that, Doug. Alleged, you know. Allegedly, he was doing this. He's not been proven guilty in a court of law, so we got to extend that to Dr. Hollington. But here's the other thing about this whole thing. The whole thing that gets me, Dr. Hollington, 59 years old.
No fool like an old fool.
I mean, come on. I mean, he was working over. Let's see, he was working. Five undercover female officers with the DEA. The good doctor was working those five. That ain't including all the other, you know, his regulars, right? These were new patients.
You get frustrated late in your career, Steve. You want to start to make some money or something out of that thing, you know?
We'll start a podcast. You know, there's all kind of creative, constructive things. You ain't gotta become a monster.
An Oxycontin monster,
and just do this to all these poor vulnerable women. Come on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Golly. So the officer secured 17 prescriptions, Schedule 1, Schedule 2, Schedule 3, and Schedule 4 controlled substances during 5 visits, including amphetamines. Mm-hmm. Benzodiazepine. Yeah, thank you. And he helped me with this next one, another big word like mayonnaise. Buprenorphine, Suboxone, Valium, Xanax, Adderall. All right, Doug. So the good doctor there in St. Augustine, he's in lockup evidently or whatever. But
his pay and play scheme. Yes.
Yeah, you know, you start
was it play and pay? I don't know.
You know, you think you start to innovate and think out of the box, and the government going to come down on you. There's just no way around it. But we're going to roll right into the podcast now, and this is a little bit different today, Doug.
Yes,
went over and had an opportunity to talk to students in the Levy County school system
yesterday. Right.
Man, I tell you, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show. I began my little talk with these kids, kind of a motivational speech, and I kind of shared.
But you couldn't tell any dirty jokes there.
Well, yeah, I had to really, you had
to tone it down.
It's one of them, you had to act like you're in Sunday school, right? That's kind of, you got to get that mindset, right? So, yeah, I had to kind of watch what I was saying, and maybe don't give them all the truth.
No hooker jokes there.
No hooker jokes. I mean, but I gave them a little bit of advice, and really it was advice I had gotten as a young man, actually going way back. So this podcast.
You can join the Army now, boys.
Yeah. You got two choices, Army or Marines. this little podcast is again just me kind of sharing that with these kids, and I think it's, like I say, something a little different than what we've done in the past. But I think everybody could get a little something out of it. And I will caveat all of this. I talk a little bit about the history at the beginning of this podcast, and there's going to be some people that will be like, oh, that's not true. That's not how it worked. And, you know, screw you. I'm talking a little bit in general terms. There were some things happening in Central Florida historically right up to 1973. It doesn't mean it the exact thing that was happening at maybe Chieflin High School or right, Chieflin right, Elementary, right, 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 right. But I was speaking in context right, of right, our right. region.
But you know, when they go to that Buy Me a Coffee link and they mm-hmm. donate that $3 mm-hmm. or that $4 to this podcast, there comes to open a little window where you can put in some comments.
They like, put a comment.
You want to criticize us. You want to tell mm-hmm. us how you like the show. That's mm-hmm. a good way to do it.
And
you
know, we appreciate
that, hey, you
it.
Were wrong about that. Mm-hmm. It was actually worse than you're talking about.
Right, right. And we appreciate that. We appreciate that feedback. And this Peruvian coffee is not cheap, so that'll help us out. But this is kind of the introduction of the. It's not the full presentation you'll see, but it's to me maybe the most important part. And enjoy it, and we'll see you next time. Pleasure to be here. You know, Tim reached out to me about 2 months ago, and I was like, Tim Franklin. Oh, just like he's saying, you know.
He's still alive.
Yeah, man. Made me feel like I might have a few more years left in me if Tim's still going. But, we started school together, kindergarten over there in Chieflin, and that makes all of us, everybody here in this room, we're all Levy County School System alumni. So I'm glad to be here with you guys today. The last group, you guys get to benefit because the last group I probably did too long of my motivational speaking. And so I only had like 20 or 30 seconds to do the fun stuff I'm going to show you. But I've spent a career as a wildlife biologist. I've worked all over the continent. And so I'm going to share some of that with all of y'all today, all the work I've done. Right now, the last 5 years, I've been working as a pilot wildlife biologist where I fly aircraft and count wildlife, survey wildlife, look for wildlife, all that type of good stuff. But as I did with the last group, I'm going to start with a little bit of history. I'm going to try to do it a little faster for you guys because what time does this one get out, Tim?
10 till, basically.
10 till, okay. So I'll try to be mindful of that. So I want to start with a little history. And I remember when I was your guys' age, it seemed like every old person just loved to talk about history. And I hated to talk about or hear about history. Like that's the last thing I wanted to learn about. But now I'm the old guy and I like to talk about history. So that's the way it goes. But I'm going to try to keep this brief because again, I understand your pain. Tim and I, we started kindergarten in 1974. 20 years before that, 1954, there was a landmark piece of legislation passed, and this was Brown versus Board of Education out of Topeka, Kansas, okay? And this landmark ruling basically desegregated the schools, right? Integrated the schools, okay? So no longer, 1954, no longer is there going to be a school just for black folks and a school just for white folks. Like that, those days are over, right? 1954. Well, you know, right here in Central Florida, we just kind of kept rolling and didn't get that memo from the federal government. And we kept rolling with two schools. So every little town down here, Bronson, Chieflin, all in Central Florida, still had two schools right up until about 1973. Okay? And just bear with me on this history lesson. But about 1974, guess who starts school? Tim and I, right? We're 5 years old. And again, they thought they were being clever down here, like, oh no, we got two schools, you know? But the federal government finally stepped in and said, no, you know, you got 1,200 people in the whole town. you don't really need two schools, right? So largely by 1974, even here in Central Florida, finally, the schools become integrated. So here's Tim and I starting kindergarten. Now we didn't know anything was going on. We're 5 years old, right? We didn't have any clue about anything in government, society, whatever. You know, when you're 5 years old, you go out to the playground, you don't care what nobody's skin color. You'd like, hey, come here. You get on that side of the seesaw, I'm gonna get on this side, we're gonna go up and down, right? I mean, you just play together, you know? So
that's really what we were doing, Tim and I. We started school. But along with integrating the students, they also had to integrate the teachers from the black school and the white school together. So as we're coming through school, and again, it's a little bit of a history lesson, Tim and I, we'd have a white teacher, then the next year, black teacher. White teacher, black teacher. That's kind of how it went all the way through school. And we were the first kids, many of the for a black student, that'd be the first black student a white teacher had, and vice versa, at this time. We didn't know that. We didn't understand any of that. It didn't mean anything to us. I can tell you, I can assure you, I know Tim's parents and I know my parents. If I'd have went home and said, hey, I don't like my teacher, my parents would be like, oh, okay, well, you get back in there. I don't care who it is. You're going to do what that teacher says. It's just kind of the way things were. So it wasn't like, your parents were going to come up to the school raising sand and, argue with the administration and tell them to move you to a different class. That ain't the way it was back then, So, we're going through like that. And I want to talk about, fourth grade. And there's a reason I want to talk about fourth grade. Now, all of our classes, we had about 60 to 70 students in our grade. So we had about three classes of about 20 to 25 students, right? Now, back then, the way those classes were organized, class number one, right, was all the smart kids, right? And real smart ones, A class, or family socially with connections. That was the number one class. Number two class was kind of smart, but they kind of dumb, So we put them number two. Number three, that last class, man, they ain't probably going to be able to read or write. Let's just take care of them, make sure they don't hurt each other, and watch out for them. That was class number three, okay? So that's the way each grade was arranged, when we were coming up. So I just wanted to set that stage because I want to share with you something that really helped me would accomplish some of the things I'm going to show you today, and that was fourth grade. And I think you've all probably heard this, but I want to share this principle that I learned in fourth grade. And I will never forget the first day of fourth grade, right? I'm sitting in there, and I'm sitting in the classroom, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, oh, I'm in number two class. I mean, I'm not in the dumb class, but of course I'm not in the smart class, but this ain't going to be too bad. I'm in number two. I look across the hallway at class number one. I look over there. I see Tim Franklin. He over there. He over there in class number one. I'm like, man, they got Miss Johnson over there. They got all the new film projectors. They got Legos. They even got something over there. It looks like it might be a computer. I didn't, back then, of course, computer take up a half a wall. And they got all kind of teaching aids. They got a whole wall of brand new storybooks and all kind of stuff. And then I look over, usually on the number two class, number three class, the only thing in the room would be a paddle, a wooden paddle hanging on that they're going to, put on your behind, right? That'd be what we had in our classroom. So I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of like, man, wish I was over there in class number one, wouldn't it be so nice? But right as I'm thinking that, here steps in my new fourth grade teacher, Mr. Bryant. Mr. Bryant steps in, he got a tie on, he's looking sharp. And Mr. Bryant straight away goes to the front of the classroom and he gives about a 20-minute speech, right? And if I could give that speech a title, I would call it the Greatness Within You speech. So he proceeds to tell all of us, hey, every one of you have greatness within you. And if you believe that you have that greatness within you, you can be, do, have, and accomplish and become anything your heart desires, anything you can visualize, right? And he just kept hitting this over and over. You have that greatness within you. If you just believe it, if you just believe it. And we were in a state of shock. I'll tell you about 5 minutes into this, because again, you got to remember, we'd kind of dumb kids, we in that class number two. What we were used to on the first day is teacher coming in and just kind of showing you that paddle. And maybe even just, let me just bring one of y'all up and show y'all how this thing works, right? Go ahead and just spank somebody right there in the front of the room, get everybody's attention, and just kind of lay down the law, like you in prison or something, right? Just kind of lay down the hierarchy. But Mr. Bryant spent almost 30 minutes just talking about how great we were. And he's like, you have so much greatness within you. He said, I believe, but you have to believe. He said, I believe it so much that this school year, every week, one of you will be crowned Student of the Week, okay? And that Student of the Week, when it's your week, you're going to get your picture in the paper, right on the front page. And that was a big deal back then, 1977, whatever year that was. You know, that was like getting 10,000 likes on the Instagram or you know, going viral on the TikTok or whatever y'all on. That was a big deal to get your picture in the paper. And he said, not only is your picture going to be in the paper, but you're going to get to write a paragraph or two or three, whatever. And all you want to write, all I want you all to write about is the greatness within you. Write about what you love. Write about what you want to do. Write about where you want to go, places you want to see, things you want to do. Just write up, and nobody going to change it. You can write whatever you want to. And he said, and also, when you're on that student of the week that week, you see that desk right there by Mr. Franklin? That's where you're going to sit. You're going to get to sit right by my desk. And then when we line up to go to the library, you're going to be first in line. And then when we line up to go to the lunchroom, you're going to be first in line. And then when we get in the lunchroom, if you want an extra cookie, we got a special place you're going to sit. And we're just going to treat you that way the whole week. And also, during that whole week that you're student of the week, the books that I read, the books we pick out and I'm going to read to the class are going to be all about things you enjoy. That's what we're going to focus on that week. And then when we go to the library, the librarian, she's going to have some books laid out that are going to be books that you like. And so, again, we were all shocked by this. We just couldn't believe that, you know, somebody was talking to us that way. But, and I'll never forget, at the end of that first day of school, and I'm telling you this story because this is one of the most important things that helped me from a young age. I already knew I wanted to do something in wildlife. There was no wildlife biologist working in Levy County back then. I didn't even know that there was a career field, you got to understand, for the things I love, because I'm like thinking about, well, I love all this stuff, but, well, I won't be a fireman, I won't be a policeman, I won't be a doctor. So I had no clue. But anyway, after school, I ran, you go out to the school buses to get on the school bus after school, and Mr. Bryant was out there on the bus yard. He had, you know, he had these extra duties for these teachers, you know, and he pulled bus duty that day, you know, so he was out there to make sure all the kids get on the bus to go home. So I'm running out there, and, you know, you only got a certain amount of time. You got to get on your bus, right? And I see Mr. Bryant. I run over to Mr. Bryant. I said, Mr. Bryant. And I remember he was like, Steve, what is it? What's wrong? And I said, Mr. Bryant, is it really true that we have greatness, that thing you said today, we got greatness within us? And if we just believe that, we can do anything we want and have anything we want and become what we want? And Mr. Bryant says, yeah. Yeah, that's true. If you believe that, then you can have and do and become anything you want. And I remember telling Mr. Bryant, I said, but Mr. Bryant, you know, I love birds and I love trees and I love, you know, deer and manatees and all these different animals. Are you saying I could do that all my life? I could just be with those animals and work like that all my life? And he said, yeah, absolutely, Steve, you can do it. And so that was the day right there where I made the decision, number one, that I had greatness within me, and I was going to be, do, have, become whatever I desired. My desire was to be a wildlife biologist. I didn't know exactly what that was at the time, but as I got older, you know, I learned, okay, here's what that career field, you know, is, to become a wildlife biologist. So if nobody's told you that, you have greatness within you. You are a creator. You are made in the image of the creator. You are blessed and highly favored. And once you bring that in internally and you acknowledge it, a word of warning, when you do that, everything on earth is going to rise up to tell you you don't have nothing within you. Like you talking about you want to be a wildlife biologist, you know, you ain't got nothing but like lint in your pocket. You don't know nobody else a wildlife biologist. You've never seen a wildlife biologist or whatever. Maybe you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, you know, anything, any of these elevated things, right? Maybe you want to be wealthy or maybe it's not about wealth. For me, it wasn't so much about money. It was just I want the opportunity to do what I love. And Mr. Bryant gave me that hope. And so I would be remiss if I didn't pass that on to you today, even though I hope you've already heard it over and over. But again, like I say, a word of warning, because as soon as you acknowledge it, you're going to be hit with obstacles, naysayers, every bad thing you can imagine, every calamity that you can face is waiting on you. What are y'all, 11th grade, 10th, 11th?
80th.
So 2 years from now, the fun's over. And if you go out there and you say, oh, I got greatness within me. I can do and become and have and be anything I want. That's what you need to say. But it's going to take discipline. It's going to take a lot of work because you're going to have to constantly reinforce it. Because everybody's going to tell you you can't. They're going to tell you you're too young. Now they're telling me I'm too old. Except Tim said I could come teach, but but I'm still thinking I'm too old, right? So you're always going to have kind of the human condition is doubt, right? And you know, I don't have the resources, or I don't have the ability, or I can't do this. That's kind of your natural operating system. That's kind of the default mode. But I learned from Mr. Bryant, and I learned from my 55 years on earth, that you got to constantly correct that default inner conversation, okay? That's the most important thing. Work on that inner conversation. Continue to reinforce no matter what anybody said. They're going to be like, oh, man, you come from Bronson? Come from a small, you're not supposed to be here. We're all from Chicago, and, you know, heck, when I was over at the University of Florida, they were like, oh, yeah, where are you from? You know, they thought I was from Dump Truck County, Alabama. I said, no, I'm from like about 27 miles from here is actually where I'm from. All of y'all are from somewhere else. But the point is, you're going to have naysayers, you're mm-hmm. going to have obstacles, you're going to have plenty of things rising against you. You're going to have people sleeping when you're talking. Don't blame the sleeper. Don't get mad at the sleeper. Let them sleep, right? Don't get mad at the obstacle. Don't get mad at the naysayers. Every time you get a naysayer or an obstacle, in fact, say good. Start training yourself, because that's going to be the thing that helps you elevate. That's going to take you to the next level. That's going to help you accomplish your goal. So inculcate that greatness within you and work with it. Create a discipline to constantly correct that self-talk. And if you do it over and over and over, eventually, guess what happens with discipline eventually? It becomes a habit. And pretty soon, you kind of like, all right, bring it on, right? When somebody tells you can't do something. And you're not arrogant, you're not cocky. You just know you got the right stuff and you can do it. No matter how you talk. You know, people hear me talk, and I've worked all over I've worked all over the world. They hear me talking, and they're like, man, you go hick, man. You're like, you a white Southern male? Man, you racist, right? They're going to say everything they can come up with about you to put you in your place, right? And again, just let them do it. It's good, right? Because every time those things happen, every time you hit an obstacle, every time somebody tells you you can't do something, I use a technique that I use. I call it a lockbox. I put it all up here in a lockbox. Girlfriend left me. Wife divorced me. Lose my home. Lose my job. Make a bunch of money. Lose the money. Somebody get killed that I'm close with, tragically. All those things happen to you. They're all going to happen. People you trust the most, the closest person to you, will throw you under the bus, right? All that's going to happen. But if you have this mentality of what I call a faith warrior, and you have faith that you have that greatness within you and that you can do and become what you want to be, we don't lash out at those people. We don't lash out at that. Now we're humans. You can be emotional, all right? It sucks, right? Have your little pity party, you know? Husband leaves you, wife leaves you, whatever. You know, whatever happens, have your little pity party. But at the end of the day, work on that self-talk and be like, hey, I've got greatness within me. You know, I'm going to be able to do this. And you take every one of those obstacles, every one of those shortcomings, every one of those things that went wrong, you put it in that mental lockbox, and every now and then, you start taking them out, right? You got something big. Friend calls you, tells you, hey, I want you to speak to 7 classes. I'm like, oh, man, I can't do that. Who am I to stand up in front of a bunch of people, you know, and talk? They all getting better grades than I got in 11th grade. They smarter than me. You correct that talk. You open that lockbox, and you look at all the things you've been through, and you pull them all out. And I'm like, damn, I made it through, you know, Army Air Assault School. I made it through Arctic Mountain School. I made it through, you know, my wife left me. I built a home and lost it and had to put my stuff in a cardboard box and leave. I lost 50% of my time with my kids. right? But I took every one of them, I found the good in it, and I elevated myself, and I didn't lash out, I didn't blame, I took it internally, took responsibility, I worked with my self-talk. Heck yeah, Tim, I'm gonna come talk to them kids, right? And so you pull that out of that lockbox. You pull all those things out and you work with them. And pretty soon, you're gonna have an attitude of gratitude for everything bad that's ever happened to you. Because every one of them looking back, now I'm not gonna ask for any more of them, but every one of them looking back, they were my defeats were some of my greatest victories. The people that told me I couldn't do something, man, they're my greatest motivational speakers ever, right? When I won something, honestly, it probably didn't help me that much. But when I lost, when I got hurt, when I got laughed at, when I got told I was dumb, when I got told I couldn't do something, man, you got to have an attitude. Hey, you done told that to the wrong person. Because I got this greatness. Mr. Bryant told me I had this greatness within me in fourth grade, right? And that's what I'm working with. And that's what I wanted to leave most importantly with y'all today before we get into fun stuff is as I go through my career and the work I've done, the only way I made it out of Levy County and made it to where I could do and become and be and have and do everything I wanted to do was because really that first principle I learned from Mr. Bryant and then sticking to it. Because he told us, he's like, you got to believe it. If you don't believe it, it don't mean anything. But he believed it, and he told us to believe it, and it set the stage for me to accomplish my goals. And when I finally, moving ahead now in history, when I finally graduated, Tim was probably, I don't know if you were valedictorian, but you were up there somewhere, Tim, somewhere in the hierarchy. But I was at the bottom. And I'm not proud of that, but I want to make a point. And that's certainly nothing to be proud of. But I probably had a GPA at the very minimum to graduate from Chiefland High School. And I say it's something right there if you're at the bottom of Chiefland High School. But I probably had a 2.1 GPA or whatever. And I was naive. I was 18 years old, right? And I just learned about that age, oh, I could be a wildlife biologist. That's exactly what I told Mr. Bryant I want to do. I was learning about it. Well, what do you have to do to be a wildlife biologist? Well, minimum, you got to have a master's degree or preferably a PhD in, biology, chemistry, ecology, the sciences. So I'm like, oh, okay. All right, well, let me, over there in Gainesville, they got a university. They got all those courses, right? So I went over to Gainesville. Again, I'm like 18, right? And I'm looking around, and there's this building that says admissions on the top of it. It's Tigert Hall, right? So I go in there, and this is like in July. I go in there, and I'm like, yep. And there's a line, and I get in the line of a bunch of students. And finally, I get up to a lady at a desk, and she had an old, big old, huge desktop computer. And I was like, ma'am, I'm here. I want to be a wildlife biologist. And she's like, all right, what's your name? So, I think maybe she got my social security number, maybe what high school I graduated from. She's like, you graduated? Oh, yeah, I graduated. And so she looked me up in the system, whatever kind of system they had back then. And I'll never forget, she turned to me and she said, Mr. Barlow, you will never attend the University of Florida. Thanks for stopping in, right? And that was my wake-up call when I graduated. So I had two choices from there, Army or Marines, right? So I went into Army, and we're almost done with the history. I went into the Army, and I get in the Army, did 5 years of active duty in the Army, then I did 3 years of reserves. By the time I got out of the Army kind of got me in there and got my head screwed on a little bit better, and I actually learned how to study. Believe it or not, the Army will teach you how to study. Honestly, most of the time in the Army, I thought I was on some kind of track team because we ran all, like for some reason, get up and run 5 miles every morning for some reason. I thought I was on the cross country team. But they do teach you how to study. And that is actually, there's a lot of technique and skill, right? Nobody had ever imparted that on me. I don't know how Chiefland High School had missed that. But again, it's not their fault. It's probably because I had my head somewhere else and not in the classroom. So anyway, by the time I got out of the Army, I had my AA degree. So I had my first 2 years of college. And then I went on to get my bachelor's once I got out of the Army. By the time I got my BS, I did that out in the Midwest. By the time I got my BS, I had a 4.0, right, in biology and chemistry and physical sciences. So I was, careful, I was doing doing pretty good academically all of a sudden. I had to take some kind of test to get into grad school. And guess what? You know, I'd been in that dumb class all through Chiefland Elementary. Well, guess what? I took that test. Heck, I exceeded the requirements for Mensa, right, if you know what Mensa is. So it turns out, maybe I'm not as dumb as they told me I was, right? And it comes back again, believing you got that greatness within you. Start working on that self-talk. No matter what anybody has said, no matter what class they put you in, they may have put you in a dumb class. I don't mean you're dumb. So anyway, I then get a call, a phone call. I put out a lot of, applications for different graduate schools. Guess which graduate school? I put in like 15. Guess which one was the first one to call me? University of Florida. And here I am. I was in Kansas at the time. And I'm like, I just remember the irony of that. And I remember the feeling like, okay, I'm going to put that in my lockbox. They told me I wasn't coming back, right? So they call me and they're, hey, we got a research assistantship. We want you to do some research on, you know, gopher tortoises and this and that. And I'm less, man, I'm all over it, right? So anyway, come back to University of Florida. And gosh, it was probably had been 8 years since that lady had told me that I would never attend the University of Florida. So I had to make up for a lot of slack time that I'd goofed off in high school. But my ability to do all that and to make up for it kind of goes back to what Mr. Bryant says, right? That's why I want to start with that today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast. All rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Also, make sure to check out the video version on YouTube. The video version includes bonus content at the end you'll surely don't want to miss. If you have any ideas for future podcast episodes, or if you would like to be a guest, please reach out. We also ask for you to send pictures or any bonus content, and we'd be pleased to add it to the bonus content portion of an episode. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.